You're listening to the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. My name is Apollonia Rockwell, and I'll be your host as we dive deep into conversations with owners, safety experts, and boots on the ground from hazardous work sites and jobs around the country to learn what it really takes to make safety achievable in dangerous industries. On this show, we love talking about company culture, total worker safety, and greatness in the workplace. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining another episode of the Apollonia Rockwell Show featuring Dangerous Jobs. And I have somebody really excited, really exciting, I should say. I'm most excited to chat with you, Felix. Today, we have Felix Nader here, who is owner, founder of Nader Associates. And first of all, Felix, thank you so much for being here today. How are you this morning?
I am fantastic, Apollonia, and it's gonna be fun. I really believe so.
This is going to be fun. I'll bring the listeners into an off-air conversation that we just had. Me and the production team were in awe over your headline on your email, and I want you to tell me what you mean by it. It's something really simple, guys. It says, "Give them heaven." And being tell me what you mean by that.
I got tired of being told that they didn't need me. The frustration level escalated to a point where I had to find a way of settling the savage beast. So I said, give them heaven, you know, get over it, you know, and do the right thing for people.
Guys, Felix has dedicated the last 21 years of his life helping keep workplaces safe, improving the safety in various industries for the workforce. And so what fascinates me about what you do, Felix, is I was telling you off air, I come from the OSHA world, the OSHA training world, regulation, right? And so you not only help workplaces strengthen their safety program, but you have emphasizes in workplace violence, in soft skills, different approaches that I honestly don't think about as much because maybe I'm working with smaller companies or, you know, so I just want to ask you, what is it that you do? What's brought you here? Why are you doing this? It's a loaded question, but I want to hear your story.
It is. And I'll go backwards as quickly as I can. So as a postal inspector, I was on the New York Division's violence interdiction team, a title that I offered, and they accept because it made sense. Interdict before it escalates, right? That's the meaning of the word. And when I first got assigned to that assignment, Apollonia, I didn't really understand what was expected of me. But the training that they exposed us to, the professional training and the introduction to all the people in the industry, I began to say, oh, my God, as a leader in the organization, it's all about managing and leading. So I jumped into it, and the unions on Long Island, the unions in Queens, New York, and the senior managers of the Postal Service embraced my approach of embracing rather than accusation. You know, no guns blaring. So I began to appreciate that from the lowest level to the senior level, when it came to this content that I was promoting, really wanted help. So I came along with the approach, which is calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah, absolutely. What were some of the experiences that you had that helped you get to that philosophy? I know that you've experienced so much on the job, personally, from what you've seen, from companies that you were consulting with. What were the experiences that brought you, that gave you that drive to be doing what you're doing today?
Aside from those 26 years as a United States Postal Inspector, that was the best career of my life. I also served another hat in the Army Reserves, rising up to being a Command Sergeant Major. Both were complex assignments, but the one that took my heart out of my chest was in retirement in 2001, being called back following September 11th by the executive director of postal operations on Long Island, who said, I'm upset and the unions are upset that postal inspectors are dedicating their work to counterterrorism and no one is looking out for workforce safety. I didn't want to come back out of retirement, Apollonia, but when he hit me with that sledgehammer over the head saying to me, I was the only one that that could address those issues. I asked my wife, could I return to the workplace? And she said, that's your calling. Go and have fun. That was my first experience with reality.
Oh my gosh. That's your calling. I think blessing is it? I mean, we could go so many different ways with this conversation today, but like, what a blessing is it that when you are in your calling, when you can do what you're meant to be doing, and I could tell that you are, I could tell that you're in your calling. That's clear from you. That's clear from reading your website. So tell me, what is it that you love doing today? How do you help businesses? And what should businesses be aware of right now when it comes to strengthening their safety program?
I like to be practical. I like to be common sense oriented.
So smart.
I don't mean that, right? Not only mean that in a negative way, common sense oriented. I like to butt heads with people who think that they have the right approach. And all it really is a sledgehammer or a lack of leadership approach. The solution is hearing, listening, and applying common sense. OSHA gives you everything that you want to do. You just have to understand how to interpret it and then roll it out in plain English.
That's the tough part. And you're so right. I mean, it's not hard. Companies come to me, you all the time. How do I get an OSHA compliance? It took me years to figure out they're not really trying to understand what it is to be in compliance. It's they know, but I love how you said that. How do you communicate that in a way that's going to be inspiring? And how are you going to lead that process? So how do you help organizations get there if they have that sledgehammer approach? Because you know what I used to think was that coming from the oil and gas industry, I used to think that the sledgehammer approach was just an oil and gas construction type of industry, but it's not.
That
approach of do what I say and don't ask questions, that's almost industry-wide.
Industry-wide. And that's their safety. That's their safety valve. Because they lack innovation. Yeah. They lack innovation. They lack initiative. They lack leadership. So the only way to be effective in their hearts and mind is to have a sledgehammer telling people what to do and not inviting them to understand that there's a dialogue and communication that can ensue from amicable discussion. Mm-hmm. If someone were to take a look at my testimonials, every one of them say he made a difference. He changed the culture. He made us listen. And my approach is to show people the difficult way of doing it and show them the easy way. A quick example. The difficult way is to give it give it a Band-Aid effect. The employees whom are adults see the Band-Aid. They look and see through it. And then when there's an incident that happens, they suddenly become the plaintiffs, the victims' greatest witnesses against the organization, because the organization failed to consider that an ounce of prevention is worth the thousands of dollars you're going to pay me, because you're going to pay a lawyer and all the mandates coming out of the civil liability action much more than the $25,000, $30,000, or $40,000 you may pay me for preventiveness and creating a culture where people say, bring Felix Nader back. He communicates clearly. He talks English.
Yeah.
So the solution really is empathy.
Oh my gosh. You know what I love that you just said is it's not, well, a couple things. Let me unpack that. I felt like that was a lot there, but
thank you.
I love how you said that the workforce in a nutshell, they're people in the field. We're all humans. We're not stupid. So you're right that they see a Band-Aid approach. What came through my mind is, an incident happens or like maybe a near miss out in the field. And then 9 times out of 10, it's a Band-Aid approach. Like, let's give them training. Let's give them, a class on forklifts, and maybe that'll help them, figure it out. But they know that that was a Band-Aid approach. And then all these near misses happen. Maybe some training was done. And now an incident, hopefully nothing catastrophic, but an incident has happened. And you're right. Now the culture is frazzled because they knew that there wasn't a culture to begin with. And you use the word culture.
Yes.
Can you tell me what your philosophy is around company culture? I used to say safety culture, but I actually don't believe companies have a safety culture. I think companies just have a culture. What do you think about that?
I think everything that you try to do, if you don't understand the culture, goes into the waste can. I think if you say it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and they're seeing lions and gorillas attacking them, the culture, you know, dominates the thinking and says, you're full of baloney. Don't talk to me. Culture is so important in making sure that you embrace the reality of the organization and the understanding of the players involved in the organization, not just an euphemism. You know, Apollonia, through these doors walk the greatest people in the world. And you treat them like sugar, honey, ice and tea. Mm-hmm. You know what that spells, right? Sugar, honey, ice, and tea, S-H-I-T.
Yeah, that's
clear. Reality. Yeah.
And that's or you see try. It.
Yeah, yeah. Or you're so convinced that you're meeting compliance, but you're not doing it with the workforce. You're creating your own rules and your own procedures and your own tax, but you're not involving the workforce and helping them understand their contribution. And so consumption with compliance undermines true ability to lead with purpose, lead with care, empathy, concern, consideration, and regard.
All right, let me give a scenario at you because I love all the words that you're using, empathy, caring. And I felt like a few years ago, these were words that were just banned from our industry, right? But I see more companies leaning into, what did you just say? Empathy. How do I lead with care? What does that mean? So let me give a scenario because I want to know for myself too. You're the expert. So let's say a company, you know, 100 employee construction company. That's a lot of the time who I'm working with. And let's say that the owners come to you and you could tell that they're in good effort and they have good intentions behind them. And they're coming to you, Felix, I am struggling with our culture here at the company. I feel like I'm trying to do all the right things with doing maybe monthly safety meetings. We have an HSC manual that nobody has ever seen a day in their life. we have some incidents. Let's say we had a couple incidents this year. And as we're closing the year, I feel like it's getting worse. How can you help us? I want to do the right thing. Like, what would you tell me? How do you help a company like that?
That you just described my ideal client.
Me too.
You did. A breakthrough, exactly. A client who says, I need help. And I know my people are looking for help. And this is the great example for me because my organizational support model is designed to sit everybody that can make a difference in a room. And then we go over all the areas as a collective team so that at the end of the day, there is an investment and not a confrontation about the things that need to get done. So I collaborate and I integrate the talent that's already in that small organization to create a coordinated effort based on coordination and collaboration. And when you do that, even the angry people who hear the interplay that goes on between the leaders and those involved in my facilitation begin to say, oh, somebody finally has articulated what I feel. And I want to give this gentleman a chance to see how he can make a difference in his organization. And long after I'm gone, I get calls, Apollonia. I'll get emails from people who say, we need you back, Felix. We need you back. You made such an indelible impression. So the thing is to get them to open up, admit that they're human. Stop listening to the people. I'll give you an example. Stop listening to the people who say, active shooter, one definition. Look. An active shooter workplace is not the active shooter in a public space. The active shooter workplace is like the student. Upset, you frazzled me, you don't take care of me, I'm going to show you who's in charge. That's personal. That's emotional. Yeah. Totally different than the impersonal. So that's the kind of generalized information that gets put out there. That's wrong. See something, say something, baloney. You're my best friend. You're my daughter's godmother. I'm going to drop a dime on you? How ridiculous. Educate, inform, elevate awareness, give examples, talk to them about realities. That's how you train. Everyone.
Go ahead. I don't want to cut you
off. No, I said everyone from the C-suite on down gets a piece of how I feel. I hit them where it hurts. They appreciate the feeling. And then they put a Band-Aid on it so they can heal over time. But not dealing with the problem is not the solution. Not dealing with the problem, Apollonia, is putting a hardworking employee on the witness stand who tells the truth. My company put out policies they didn't enforce. My company delivered training where the leadership is not even involved. The security consultant came in and made recommendations. None of the recommendations have been implemented. Get real, because the good, hardworking employee on that witness stand is going to hurt you. The good working employee is going to kill you on production, kill you on performance, kill you on morale, esprit de corps, and then adversely impact the culture.
You take my breath away. You are speaking straight to the heart. And more importantly, you are speaking in such practical terms that I can visually see you are a master communicator, Felix. I am not kidding. I am like blown away right now, because I feel like I've asked that question a lot of times, like, hey, how would you help a safety company? How do you diffuse a situation? You know what you just told me? A practical solution that the listeners can do right now, or they can contact you, get an expert in and help them. But you just gave a practical solution. Your solution was, I get everyone in the room.
Yeah.
C-suite, right. Boots on the ground, right. Men and women in the office. And we're all communicating the tough stuff.
Yes.
That's the solution. Yes. And then it doesn't happen in one training. It doesn't happen in one seminar. It takes time.
Exactly.
But I see what you're saying. And how many times do you work with a company that, or not even that you work, hopefully you get to work with these companies, but how many times are there companies that they have these great culture, but they are trying great culture, great employees, but they have these few bad eggs, and those few bad eggs are disgruntled. They are angry. What advice would you give the same advice to the business owner? Wait, what do I do? We have some disgruntled employees. I don't even know how to go about this. We can't let them go. Yeah. Like, they're great, but.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
What do I do?
Yeah. You have to ask thoughtful questions. And here are my three thoughtful questions that begin with three simple words. Why, how, and what? Why are you this way? How do we get here? And what can we do to resolve it? That's the approach to all of my, assessment issues, all my approach to my incident, resolution problems is get to the heart of people, and you'll get a partner on your team who will open your ears to things that you can't find because they're the gatekeepers of the information and they're gatekeepers of the awareness. The thing that prevents this from happening, Apollonia, is even though they're going to look at my bio and see 26 years of federal law enforcement, and 26 years simultaneously as an Army Reserve Sergeant Major, they're conflicted because they don't see the tough guy. Let me tell you something. God didn't make me to walk around with a hammer and then invite people to be my friend. He made me to be persuasive, influential, communicative. Mm-hmm. That's how I get my job done. That's how I get my job done. So if you don't hire someone like me because I'm not a tough guy, you're losing on the value of communication. You're losing on the understanding that allowed me to acquire such insight from smarter people than I am.
I'm not led by a tough guy. If I'm trying to learn a new way of approach, a new way of living, a new way of thinking, I don't want to be strong. I don't want to be sledgehammered into
neither
a way of thinking.
Yeah.
I want to be inspired, like you said.
Yes.
I want to be
That's
inspired
right.
by you painting the vision of what's possible.
Here's
Correct. Where we could go as a company. Oh my gosh. I just have so many questions. This is making my head hurt. So, all right, a couple more things, because you're clearly a master communicator.
Well, thank you.
Why, Felix, is it so hard to communicate? And you work with various industries. We've already established that this isn't an oil and gas thing. This isn't a construction thing. This is an industry-wide problem where there's disgruntled employees. And disgruntled to me is I don't feel safe communicating what's on my mind. And there's just all these, internal thoughts that I share with, my closest buddy here at work. So why is it so hard for us to communicate those things?
Because the leader in an organization forgets that he was he's a father, a mother, a wife at home, who has certain parameters and rules that they operate under. And they come to the workplace, Apollonia, and they suddenly their ego dictates their behavior. And both sides become confrontational rather than relational. And you have barriers to communication that revolve around, it's my responsibility. You either do what I say or don't let the doorknob hit you where the good Lord split you. And so the barriers to communications are impervious at times because people don't want to listen to someone else's better idea. And I'll give you an example. I'm going back to Virginia to work with a client whom was a client of mine 5 years ago in another part of Virginia. And you know what he told me? He said, We need you. When you gave your figure, my boss was astounded. Oh my God, does it cost that much? And he said, but the results are incredible.
Priceless.
And it's not about, you have best practices. How about common sense best practices? Right? How about best practices for your company and what makes your company a success? Around your best practices, tied in some external best practices. I get it. Don't fear compliance. Don't fear OSHA. They're here to help, and if you just do the right thing, you'll be okay. And the only eyes you need to influence is your employees, because if they have your back, you are protected.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I have shifted during this conversation. I have shifted from an interviewer to a student, and I'm going to start asking you some personal questions that the audience gets the benefit of listening to, because you are like blowing my mind right now. So, all right, here's another question that I just am personally curious about. So when you're taking a company, let's take the dream client, and that's the client that is, Felix, I need help. I'm raising my hand. I need help. This company wants to go from good to great. They want greatness within their organization. And I know you've worked with some great companies. And we have a lot of people, the majority of people listening to this podcast, whatever their title is, they are intrigued by greatness. So can you tell me what it looks and feels like to work with a great company?
Okay.
Because you've either taken them there, I know you have, or you have just been around some great companies. And so what does that culture have? What are some elements? And what do the leaders look like? What does that company look like? So that way we can know what to strive for.
People that are listening would think that I paid you to create these questions, and I didn't.
They think that this is a setup between you and I. We've had no communication before this. Listeners, we have not set this up. Yeah. This is all ad hoc.
Yes. I have an ideal scenario for you. So a big pharmaceutical company, again, based in Long Island, approached me and said, we have a concern of workplace violence. I always ask the question, what do you mean? What is your definition of workplace violence? And of course, they're confused. They think it's the guy that comes in postal and comes in with a gun and shoots the place up. And that's the disgruntled transition from that behavior into retaliation. We hopefully will never get there. So she says to me, you're going to have a hard time, Mr. Nader, in trying to do what you want to do, but come in anyway. The first meeting, we had her team around the table, and this is how they sat. Listening to me, this is how they sat throughout the whole 2-hour roundtable. By the end of the walkthrough that I invited them all to come along with me, we were supposed to meet after lunch to discuss the walkthrough. They worked through their lunch because they were so enthusiastic and so engaged with me and our ability to communicate. See, my consulting process isn't just a shoot from the hip. It is a model. It is integration, collaboration, coordination, communication, and execution. And the leader is responsible for all this. So when I'm listening to an objection or to a resentment, I'm saying, where does that person fit into my ability to influence them? So at the end of the day, they not only want what I have to offer, they want to know when I can get started.
Because it's about them.
Can you help? And that company today, it's by the way, the the company's Alere, A-L-E-R-E. Take a look at their testimonial. And she said to me when my book came out, she said, I want a copy of that book, but I tell you, we don't need you because you left so much behind that the people are enthusiastic and motivated. That's the greatest compliment in the world. When they don't need me anymore. And only call me when there's an actual concern.
Oh, that's my idea. I love that. And so many things that you said sparked other thoughts for me. And here's one thing that's burning on the top of my mind is when you're leading a company like that, let's say a pharmaceutical company, they have so many employees, yes, but they have so many divisions, right? They have a lot. Yeah. There's a lot going on versus like a 50 employee company. Okay. So how important is it to communicate the vision of the company? What is more important? This is a genuine question. What is more important when you're leading a massive organization, the vision of the company, where we're going? Or is it the developing of relationships? What do you recommend to a company first? Is it relationship approach? Is it the vision? What is going to get the employees excited and motivated to come to work every day, to keep pressing on when things get tough? What do you think about those two things, relationships, vision of the company?
Great question. So the Nader model looks at the realities of the reality. You can have a great vision. And you can aspire to have relationships. But unless you have an understanding that's deeply rooted in employee feedback, the vision goes out the window and the relationships will never exist. So what I try So what I try to do, whether it's a small company of 10 people or a large company, I find the ambassadors in those large organizations and I find the CEO and I almost treat them the same. This is your company. Do you want to lose it all over one lawsuit? And then I get the ambassador. Your job is to be the know-it-all. Your job is to be Felix Nader for your company, but not with a hammer, with an influential approach that speaks to them individually to help them, to let them look at their own data. Stop looking at the FBI's data and Homeland Security's data. They're significant as resources, but look at your own data. Do you have substantial data that says everything is going along smoothly? I love my company. No, you probably don't. Why don't you get it and use that as the basis of every consultant you hire? Make sure that your consultant reads those surveys and develops a business approach to the security problems that I'm trying to resolve.
Oh, my goodness. Make sense? Go ahead.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And here's why it makes sense. Here's why that just clicked in my mind is you just outlined an approach that leads the ambassador to take control of their own destiny.
Absolutely.
And I think that people, when they're, trying to go to the next level or they're wanting to do better within their organization, they feel that they're out of control. Am I right, Felix? They think that's all leadership. Right. This is all leadership. And I hope everyone listening to this podcast or listening to the YouTube, because you need to watch Felix's body language in this too. watch the YouTube clip of this. But people, do you agree that most employees feel that they are out of control of their destiny, that I'm just showing up every day and everyone else is in charge and I just don't have a say in anything, because they genuinely feel that way? Is that right?
Yes. And the example that I oftentimes give when people say, why can't I carry a gun in the workplace? That's how angry they feel. And to dissipate that anger, I use this example. I said, okay, so you have a gun and everybody is allowed to carry guns in the workplace. And I don't like to carry guns because I love coming to work and you don't. So you don't like me because I have the strange attitude that everybody else seems not to have. And then one day you happen to park alongside me and I'm on the phone with my wife having a jovial conversation. And I said to my wife, honey, you're not going to believe this, but the biggest pain in the rear end just pulls up next to me. Mr. Arrogant just pulled up next to me. I want to show him a thing or two. And I'm angry because he's always bullying me. I walk behind him. I tap him on the shoulder, distract him. And I reach in his holster and I take his gun. And I say to the class, everybody that's in that 1,000 personnel warehouse is armed. Yeah. But the one guy who isn't armed shoots the guy that's been bullying him with his own gun and then drops the gun. What can you all do, as angry as you are, with the notion that a gun will save someone's life? It won't. It'll make things worse.
It'll make things
so
worse.
Angry people have to have solutions to their anger. And people who lead to have big ears to listen to the solutions.
You know, this is that scenario that you just described is making me think of, you said something earlier when the pharmaceutical company, I think you mentioned, called you, maybe it was the other company that called you, and they said something about workplace violence, and you asked them, what does that mean to you?
What
so I wanted to ask you then, I wrote that down, and you said, because I was telling their production team, I'm like, I'm even confused. You said, most people are confused when they hear workplace violence. I'm confused. I think of what you described as workplace violence, I think of the disgruntled employee who is trying to shoot up the workplace. So when you specialize in workplace violence, can you, as we're wrapping this up, because we've seriously have almost been talking for 30 minutes. I don't even know how that's possible. It's been a minute talking to you. It's been a minute. I want to respect your time. I could talk forever with you. What does that mean for listeners? Because most listeners are mid-sized company, 50 to 100 employees. I think that's like general. So what can listeners do today, whether you're a safety coordinator or you're a owner of a small company, 100 employees, how do we take the first step in workplace violence? You said angry employees need a place or a space to work out that anger. I've never even connected the two. So tell me about all that.
Yes. They need an ear that's big enough for them to want to listen to their problems and then be resolute in following through to the resolution of that problem. So here's where Here's where they mostly are, but we focus in on the guy with the gun. They're mostly in the verbal abuse, name calling, bullying, harassment, sexual comments, ethnic remarks. Mm-hmm. That's where they mostly reside. And guess what happens to the guy? True story. Guess what happens to the guy who is now tired of receiving the bullying? He reports it. They say, get a life, Felix. This is shop talk.
Toughen up.
Get thick skin. Who goes home to his wife and says, you need a job. Stop complaining. They're going to fire you. Who eventually gets targeted. Supervisor comes in and says, nobody likes you, Felix. You better shape up or ship out. Felix says, oh my God, my wife tells me I need a job. What am I to do? My dignity it's attacked every single day. Okay, I'm going to do my job. Felix, come in here. You're not cooperating with these guys. And they're writing you up. What are you going to do about this? And I get emotional, because frustration leads to emotional responses. And I say, what am I supposed to do? Felix, if you don't shape up, you're going to be shipped out. I get a write-up that says last warning. The next time is out the door. Who do you think I'm going to blame for that transaction that has caused my wife and I now to have doubt about whether or not our standard of living can be retained? And by the way, my kids who are in college, who's going to pay for the college tuition? And my wife, who's at home raising these kids, I mean, she has no job skills. So I sit at home and I go for unemployment, all from a simple minor incident. And unemployment says they gave you bad paper. I'm sorry, you're a threat to the workplace. You're not entitled to workplace violence. I mean, unemployment insurance, excuse me. So you go home to your wife and you say, honey, things aren't working out. And she says to you, we have no more money in the savings account. And you go back to the employee and you plead your case to the union, or you plead your case to arbitration and grievances, and they portray you as the troublemaker. What else is left, Apollonia, to the person who's insecure, to the person who might be suffering from anguish, who now we say mental health that didn't exist before he went to that place of employment? Yeah. Now the mental health issue rises to the forefront and we label this person a nut. No, we were the nuts for tolerating that. That's a good example of how things evolve. Something simple escalates.
You're a master, not only master communicator, but you're a master storyteller. And that is one of your gifts, Felix, because I pictured everything that you just described right there. And I know everyone listening knows that person, that they either are that person, they're working alongside that person, they know. And the way you described it, you just made me stressed out listening to that story. painted that picture so well. Yeah. You made me feel like I'm that person. I'm stressed out because you just described your all-American man with that stress and anxiety and anger. Yes. I recently interviewed a local therapist, and she primarily communicates with workers, blue collar workers. And I said, what are these men and women dealing with? Primarily men.
Yeah.
She said, anger.
Anger.
There's so much. Anger. She said, caused by anxiety in the workplace. From the scenario that you just said, they're going home.
Yes.
Wife is telling them, you need this job. They go to job and they hate their job because maybe they're just, they don't know how to communicate, but it was rooted in this anxiety and how that shows up in someone's life, and how we need to be sensitive to that person. We need to be sensitive to those scenarios. This is an amazing conversation. There's no way it's been 35 minutes. I want to have you on the show again, Felix, because you're a blessing to our listeners.
Thank you.
And when you are working in your calling like you are transforming people's lives every day, people that you are in touch with. So if you would do the honor for our guests and for myself to have you on again, because I could talk another hour with you.
I would have fun doing it. I enjoy this. I enjoy the speaking rather than the reacting to negative responses.
I love it. I love it. Well, you gave a lot of practical advice for listeners today, and that's what I really appreciate. A lot of first steps. And so everyone, Felix, we're going to connect you with Felix in this podcast episode, wherever you're listening, drop down to the details and you're going to find links to get in contact with Felix. It'll link you to his website. And I would love, Felix, afterwards for you, us to, if you could show us how to purchase your book, we'll link that in the podcast as well.
Sure.
Get all the details on how you can further strengthening your safety program within your organization, how to take your culture to the next level. Thank you so much, Felix. Any last thoughts that you have for the listener on how they can better their lives, on how they can better their workplaces? Any final thoughts?
Yes. My wife accuses me of this all the time.
Let's hear it.
Find, no matter how you're hurting, find the best response, not a reaction, because the reaction, we've lost control. Find the best response that you can live with, so that when you're out of your skin, you're proud of yourself and how you handle yourself. Don't let the moment emotionalize your reaction to an adverse situation. Quickly, I'll tell you this. So I was in DC before working for a guy who was a great guy. He didn't understand my leadership styles. So he was constantly questioning my style. So one day I pretty much said to him, whatever you want to do, boss, you can. And we had a meeting and he begins to harangue me. And I looked up to the good Lord and I said to him in his response, when he asked me, did I have any questions? I said, it is obvious, boss, that your perspective on life is very myopic. Didn't raise my voice. The lawyer in the room who always shows up when HR is around says, I believe this meeting is over with. And I think Mr. Nader represented himself quite well. And that was the end of it. You know, it's find a way to manage your anger so that you can own the outcome if you were out of your skin looking at you and the way you carried yourself. Maintain your cool, calm, and collected composure all of the time.
All the time. Another practical advice that will benefit you in your life today, tomorrow, on the weekend, in the workplace, how you show up for your family. That's another, I feel like all the advice, Felix, tell me if I'm wrong, all your advice resonates with employees and businesses so well. I already know this is why businesses call you back, because you're not just enhancing people's lives in the workplace, but you're enhancing their lives outside when they go home, aren't you?
I'm in communications with the executive on Long Island. Today he says, I really appreciate how you evolved, because you are better than you were then. And I hope people appreciate you today.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Well, I sure appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate being on your show. I don't like talking about statistics. I don't like talking about data because I get offended when they start talking about everybody else's data. And then when I ask them about their data, they know zero about it. So the idea that this is a philosophy and a mm-hmm. philosophical approach is important because leaders have to lead from within. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't lead someone to a situation when you don't have the experience and mm-hmm. the ability to want to invest in those people. You got to invest in them. And that's what minimizes the problems at work when you invest in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much advice for leaders, running organizations and for your average person who is just trying to be better in their life, just a little bit better. You gave advice for everyone listening across the board. So I just really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I hope to have you on the show again.
My pleasure.
So early next year, whatever it is, I'd love to have your time if you'd grace us with that. But
Thank you very much. We
will connect you with Felix in the details. You can connect with him, hire him for your business, large business, small business. Just get in touch with him. So thank you so much for listening. Make sure you're watching also on the YouTube show. But everyone, have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
All right. I got to do this. Have a good one.